This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, June 2nd, 2014. I'm Christina Karnatz. The 11th annual Wakarusa Music Festival is June 5th through the 8th on Mulberry Mountain in Ozark. Over 150 acts will perform, including Bass Nectar, Dr. Dog, and Boombox. Camping, arts, and entertainment, activities, and more will be offered. Tickets and information available at wakarusa.com. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, finding balance between nature and technology. We speak with author Richard Louv about nature deficit disorder and possible ways to cure it. Plus, autism spectrum disorder is on the rise in Arkansas. We learn more about the Arkansas Autism Resource and Outreach Center. But first, Republicans David Sterling and Leslie Rutledge will face off next week in a runoff election for their party's nomination for Arkansas Attorney General. They bested a third candidate in the May 20th primary, but neither had the 50% needed to avoid a runoff. Among the issues, Rutledge says she opposes medical marijuana, but would support whatever voters decide in November if given the opportunity.
If medical marijuana passes, I will enforce and defend the law of the state just as any law, but and not put my own personal preferences. I'm not going to be like Eric Holder and pick and choose which laws to enforce and not. And I think that's where my opponent and I differ.
But Sterling says he also will not let personal preferences dictate his actions as Attorney General.
Yeah, well, that's actually a misstatement of my position on medical marijuana. My position on it is I am also opposed to it personally, but as Attorney General, it's not going to be my job to pick and choose which laws to defend and which laws to ignore.
Although both candidates say they won't let personal politics guide enforcement, they both speak out strongly against most federal authority. ArcBest Corporation will expand its operations in Fort Smith. The company announced Friday that it will purchase 40 acres at Chaffee Crossing for new headquarters. Kathy Fiewiger, Chief Marketing Officer for ArcBest Corporation, says that while other sites were considered for the new facility, the site at Chaffee Crossing best met the company's goals for cost effectiveness, location, and expandability. She also says the new facility will help move more personnel under one roof.
It's going to be the facility that houses all the ArcBest corporate personnel and the AVF logistics personnel. We're out of space at our main headquarter building on Old Greenwood Road, and currently the ABF logistics people have been in a rented space on Rogers Avenue. So this new facility allows us to relocate those employees to, you know, one area where they'll all be together.
Design work for the new headquarters isn't yet complete, but Fiewiger says the new facility will likely be smaller than the company's existing 195,000 square foot corporate center on Old Greenwood Road. Nonetheless, she says with the construction of the new headquarters and potential for expansion in the company's various subsidiaries, ArcBest expects to add 975 new jobs to the Fort Smith workforce by 2021.
They would be jobs that are provided by the Fort Smith-based ArcBest companies, which are the parent company, ArcBest, and that's the, you know, the general administrative, accounting, all those types of functions at a corporate level, legal, everything like that. And then the additional jobs would be at the other companies, which are ArcBest Technologies, that is the IT group that has the solutions for ABF Freight and ABF Logistics, and all of the companies have growth prospects. So they would be jobs spread among those companies.
Fiewiger says that a groundbreaking for the new headquarters will likely be held this fall, with the facility opening in late 2015 or early 2016. Ozark Regional Transit is starting its second express route today. Route 620 will serve the communities of West Fork, Greenland, Farmington, Prairie Grove, and Lincoln, with a connection to other ORT and Razorback Transit routes at Lot 56 at the U of A in Fayetteville. Jeff Hatley, Public Information Officer for Ozark Regional Transit, says that Route 620 operates on weekdays from 6:15 in the morning until 9:15 at night, and that the route repeats itself every 3 hours.
If you're getting on at Harps there in West Fork, 3 hours later, you'll have another chance to get on it. Now, obviously, the towns in between West Fork and Lincoln, you know, there would be more frequency because they're in between, but there's an eastbound route and there's a westbound route, so you can't necessarily get on each stop both ways. There's some places you can, but not all of them. For example, Lincoln High School, you can get on it on the westbound track, but not on the eastbound.
The implementation of Route 620 was funded in part by additional operational contributions from the Washington County Quorum Court, which allocated proceeds from the state's half-cent highway sales tax to Ozark Regional Transit. Hatley says that, in return, the new route will better connect area residents to amenities throughout the region's communities.
As I was going through college, I was the poor college student in Little Rock. I depended on public transportation in order to be able to allow me to get to University of Arkansas Little Rock. I'm assuming that there's going to be a lot of people in the exact same situations in Lincoln and even as far west as Westville, Oklahoma, that can maybe make it to Lincoln, but maybe not all the way to the University of Arkansas or to one of the NWAC campuses. And the same being said for West Fork and Prairie Grove and a lot of those places.
With the new route beginning today, Ozark Regional Transit has extended its reach into six new communities this year. The Arkansas Razorback baseball team season is over. Arkansas lost to Virginia 9-2 last night in an NCAA regional. The Razorbacks had survived elimination earlier Sunday with a 10-0 win over Bucknell. The Razorbacks finished the 2014 season with a 40-25 record. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals are off today after ending a Texas road trip yesterday with a 2-1 win over Corpus Christi. The Nats host Tulsa at Arvest Ballpark tomorrow night in Springdale. Former Arkansas Razorback golfer Stacy Lewis is again ranked number one in the world after winning the ShopRite LPGA Classic this weekend in New Jersey. Lewis previously held the top spot in the world for 4 weeks last year. Tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies with a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms in northwest Arkansas. In the River Valley, a slight chance of showers and lows around 70 degrees. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of morning showers and thunderstorms, highs in the upper 80s. Tomorrow evening, mostly cloudy, lows around 70. This is Ozarks at Large. New data show that one in every 65 children in Arkansas has an autism spectrum disorder. University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences in Little Rock is helping to gather data, working with the U of A Fayetteville on outreach. In the first of a two-part series, Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich profiles UAMS's Arkansas Autism and Developmental Disabilities Monitoring Program.
In 2000, the Centers for Disease Control began to track the prevalence of autism in the United States, funding six research sites across the country. Known as the National Autism and Developmental Disabilities Monitoring Network, its first round of data showed that one in every 150 children under 8 years of age had an autism spectrum disorder, or ASD. This past March, March 27th, with 11 monitoring sites reporting one out of every 68 children under 8 has some form of autism. But Allison Hudson says the prevalence is higher in Arkansas. She's project coordinator for Arkansas Autism and Developmental Disabilities Monitoring Program in UAMS's section of developmental pediatrics.
The CDC covered less than 10% of the national population of 8-year-olds. So they're very careful to caution that 1 in 68 is not necessarily representative. But because we covered the entire state of Arkansas, we can say 1 in 65 children in Arkansas, 8-year-olds in Arkansas, was identified with autism spectrum disorders.
Allison Hudson says the Arkansas Autism and Developmental Disabilities Monitoring Program gathers data from educational and healthcare sources around the state.
We would have a team of clinician reviewers who are medical and healthcare professionals review the information in the record against the DSM-4 criteria for an autism spectrum disorder. And then they would code that and determine whether or not just the child had ASD or meets the definition of a case. So we work with over 250 sources across the state. We make sure we establish agreements with them to be compliant with the HIPAA and FERPA regulations.
The data is processed and assembled, then released to stakeholders. Nearly 8,000 records have been pulled on as many as 7,000 children in Arkansas, all anonymously maintained in a secure database, including demographic data.
Boys are about four times more likely to be identified with ASD than girls. We have racial information. White children are more likely to be identified with ASD than black or Hispanic children. They're about 60% more likely to be identified than black children and 90% more likely to be identified than Hispanic children.
35% of those with an ASD in Arkansas have an intellectual disability, a reversal since 2002, which Allison Hudson attributes to more astute reporting by parents, physicians, and educators. Arkansas is one of two states in the entire national network that monitors statewide. Dr. Eldon Schultz, MD, Principal Investigator for the Arkansas Autism and Developmental Disabilities Monitoring Program, says autism can be detected several ways.
Children having difficulty in the social domain, having difficulty connecting with other individuals, other peers, and other adults, and associated with that are abnormal communication patterns and difficulties communicating both verbally and nonverbally, nonverbally meaning gestures and eye contact. And the third piece of it is odd and atypical and stereotypic behaviors such as rocking or spinning and having fascinations and interests in topics that go far beyond what would be typical for the same age peer. And all of those have to be at a level that functionally impair the child.
Dr. Schultz teaches at UAMS, but also maintains a practice as a developmental behavioral pediatrician 2 days a week at the Dennis Developmental Center. He says screening children for an autism spectrum disorder is rigorous.
There is a recommendation by the American Academy of Pediatrics that all children need to be screened using a standardized tool at 18 and between 24 and 36 months. And the tool that is being used most widely is the MCHAT.
Modified Checklist for Autism in Toddlers, MCHAT.
Yes, the MCHAT is a screening tool that is administered or completed by the parent and scored by a clinician. And it then puts the child at no risk or at risk for having autism. And based upon that, further evaluation would be indicated if the child is determined to be at risk for the disorder.
Diagnostic terminology is also falling by the wayside, including Asperger's syndrome, which now falls under the umbrella of autism spectrum disorder. ASDs are difficult to track, experts say, because of changing diagnostic criteria and lack of diagnostic biomarkers. But Dr. Schultz says good interventions are in place now, which begins with educating parents to avoid misleading information.
The parents need to be grounded in a scientific approach to how they're going to intervene with their children. And then the next thing is parents need to connect with their early intervention or early childhood's programming through their local community. And that is, in Arkansas, it's the early intervention is the 0-3 First Connections is the name of the program. And that is through their county DHS office. And then above 3-5 is the public school, and that's early childhood services. And they provide an array of services. As an example of the kind of the core therapies are OT, or occupational therapy, physical therapy, and speech therapy. But there's 12 other services that can be provided through those agencies that will help the child and the family. With the hopes of getting the child to be as typical as possible, and hopefully the child entering kindergarten with minimal to no services, so the child looking typical when they get to that age.
Medications may also be prescribed for co-occurring symptoms, for example, ADHD, anxiety, depression, or cognitive rigidity, ultra-fixed behavior patterns. Applied behavioral analysis is also increasingly being used by certified practitioners to therapeutically modify behavior, helping children to better assimilate into neurotypical culture. Dr. Schultz first became fascinated with autism decades ago when he was first practicing in San Diego, noticing certain children lacked social interactive skills, So when he arrived at UAMS, the diagnosis was still rare, but within the past 5 years, he said, it comes up daily now. And he says the cause of autism is more clear now.
The latest literature, and that's become quite stable over the course of the last several years, is there's a 50% environmental or nature and 50% genetic. That number has shifted from being much more genetic in the past, but now there's been two major studies, large-scale studies, that pretty much indicate that there's a 50-50 mix between the two as the causal agents.
And if left untreated, what happens to children with autism spectrum disorders?
We know that the rate of going to college and employment is significantly lower, and being able to lead productive and fulfilled lives is a real challenge for them.
Clinical pediatrician Dr. Eldon Schultz recommends concerned listeners visit the Arkansas Autism Resource and Outreach Center, which lists diagnosis, assistance, insurance information, treatment, and the latest research. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
You can find the Arkansas Autism Resource and Outreach Center at AAROC.org. In the second part of our series on the rise of autism in Arkansas, Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich looks at a new autism intervention special ed curriculum being taught at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. That's on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large.
I'm Robin Young. That recent report on fair trade was shocking to many. We'll take a deeper look with the author.
What we found was very striking and surprising to us, which was that wages and working conditions on average were worse in the areas dominated by fair trade certified producer organizations.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Tune in this afternoon at 1 to hear Here and Now on KUAF.
Business news was plentiful last week with a bid from Tyson Foods to purchase Hillshire Farms, a potential merger of Simmons First and Liberty Bank, plus Bentonville-based Car-Mart reports a less-than-stellar quarter. Roby Brock with our content partner Talk Business and Politics has more in this week's Talk Business and Politics update.
Tyson Foods announced a $6.8 billion bid for Hillshire Brands, which is contemplating an offer from Tyson rival Pilgrim's Pride. The $50 per share cash proposition was announced early Thursday morning. Springdale-based Tyson Foods said the proposal would provide Hillshire shareholders with, quote, an immediate and significant return on their investment. Fresh off three major acquisitions in less than a year, Pine Bluff-based Simmons First National announced another big buyout. Simmons First said it has entered into a definitive agreement and plan of merger with Liberty Bank Shares, headquartered in Springfield, Missouri. According to the terms of the agreement, Simmons First will acquire all of the outstanding common stock of Liberty in a transaction valued at $207 million. Liberty is a $1.1 billion bank and is the 10th largest bank in Missouri in rankings by deposits. The Dixie plant in Fort Smith is receiving a $40 million equipment and facility upgrade for a new plate line expected to be in production in 2015. Officials with Atlanta-based Georgia-Pacific, the parent company of Dixie, announced the expansion Thursday, saying that employment at the plant will exceed 350 once the new line is fully operational. Georgia-Pacific invested more than $30 million in Fort Smith in the past 2 years. A rough quarter dented America Car-Mart's full-year earnings. The Bentonville-based Buy Here, Pay Here used car dealer reported full-year net income of $21 million on revenues of $489 million. 1 year ago, Car-Mart posted profits of $32 million on sales of just under $465 million. Officials blamed higher charge-off levels and pressure from financing competitors for the declining profits. And finally, GOP gubernatorial candidate Asa Hutchinson rolled out a plan he says is aimed at reforming public safety and reducing drug abuse in Arkansas. The plan includes more money for supervising parolees, more funding for drug courts, and support for reentry programs for inmates returning to the workforce. In the general election, Hutchinson faces Democrat Mike Ross, who says he'll be unveiling a public safety plan of his own in the coming weeks. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business and Politics update.
Support for Talk Business and Politics on Ozarks at Large comes from AT&T, reminding drivers to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More at itcanwait.com. Springdale can sometimes be seen as the underdog in our region. The perception is that all of the money is in Bentonville and Rogers to the north, and the smart hip set is south in Fayetteville. But there's a group of former Springdale high schoolers whose entrepreneurial endeavors are shaking up the town's image and could be shaping a different future. Ozarks at Large's Sarah Burningham has this story.
Something's brewing in Springdale. And it's not just the house-roasted coffee they're serving up here at Onyx Coffee Lab on West Sunset. It's a movement. Started off by alum of Springdale High School who have stuck around or come back home and hope to transform their hometown into a hub for homemade, artisanal, creative businesses. John Allen graduated from Springdale High in 2001. He and his wife Andrea are founders and owners of the Onyx Coffee Lab. They roast ethically sourced coffee and sell it online and through their coffee shops, one on Greg in Fayetteville and the other, their flagship location in Springdale. John says Springdale was a great place to get started.
As we got more and more into specialty coffee, we kind of realized that there wasn't anyone in Arkansas doing what would now be called like third wave coffee or like true high-end specialty coffee. And so that's kind of where the Onyx brand was born, and we thought we'd try it in Springdale since we've always wanted. You know, she graduated from Shiloh. We've always kind of wanted a place to hang out in Springdale ourselves. So we thought if we could prove the concept here, then we could kind of do it anywhere.
Now 2 years on from founding the Onyx brand, John and Andrea Allen now employ 45 people and are looking at opening another cafe, possibly in the Bentonville area in the future. Oh, and that branding, if you've seen it, the skull kind of tattoo art logo, that was designed by another Springdale High grad, Jeremy Teff, of Black Box Design. Amber Perrodin graduated from Springdale High 12 years ago. She and her husband, Jonathan, are founders and owners of Perrodin Supply Company. They sell handcrafted homewares, original art, and artist supplies online and in stores across the country. And Amber also founded and organizes the Little Craft Show in Fayetteville, which last December, despite the snow, she says showcased 60 vendors and attracted 4,000 shoppers. But right now, the Perrodins are spearheading Team Springdale. It's a hashtag, an Instagram account, a Twitter feed, and basically a new way for fired up folks to show their love for Springdale. Their Instagram account has 1,200 followers and it's growing. And Amber says she thinks there's a new generation of entrepreneurs who are committing to Springdale.
This generation of early 30s, late 20s, people that are coming out of Springdale, that there's this swell of energy that's coming to the top now in Springdale is what we're all starting to see. What is happening with Springdale is we have all grown up in the shadows of these large corporations, Tyson, George's, the Allens, Allen Cane and Company, and the Jones, the Joneses, and then J.B. Hunt. I mean, there's these big, big players that are in Springdale. And so being born and raised in Springdale, you just kind of grow up in the shadow of those places, and you see those, and you appreciate them. And I think a result of that is we grew up in, like, a very working-class community where we saw hard work pays off, creativity pays off. And so I think that what we're doing now is just working our tails off, and we're seeing it start to pay off.
Over at Springdale's Chamber of Commerce, Bill Rogers, who's head of communications, agrees that today's startups can learn from the town's rich history of entrepreneurship.
Springdale has a can-do spirit, and that goes back for many, many years, whether it was John Tyson or Gene George, or even really predating J.B. Hunt, when you had one of the nation's largest trucking companies, Jones Truck Lines, began here in Springdale. So you had those entrepreneurs that just had a good old-fashioned, all-American, what do we need to get done, how do we get it done?
But he also says the Chamber and the more established businesses of Springdale can learn from this new wave of young startups.
Whether it be the application of technology or at its base level, just raw energy and enthusiasm, that feeds, everyone feeds off of that.
And he says the city and the chamber are doing what they can to encourage small businesses in Springdale.
Just getting from an idea to being able to open your doors, We've always been very proud of the fact that you can do it more quickly here than in general some of our neighboring cities. Even in 2013, we took that a step further. We do require business licenses in the city, and it's a process of zoning approval and building safety and those kinds of things. We've taken that process online, so you don't have to come to City Hall and, you know, go to three different offices. You can do it. You can submit it. So all of that toward an effort to make doing business in Springdale easier.
And here's something you maybe didn't know about Springdale. Since 2010, 49% of all new jobs in the state of Arkansas were created in Springdale. Amber Peridin says Springdale is energized.
There's this handmade movement, or this like startup entrepreneurial movement that's happening in Springdale, where these people are moving in that maybe aren't making a big fuss about moving to Springdale, but they're there and it's happening, and they're setting up their businesses there and they're quietly running for now. And I think that in the next couple of years, it's going to just be projected really loudly and people are going to say, oh my gosh, where did Springdale come from?
It's a period of entrepreneurship. We are seeing business startups unlike we've seen for probably about a 20-year period.
Bill Rogers, VP of Communications at Springdale Chamber of Commerce, again there. Back at Honest Coffee Lab on Sunset, owner John Allen says Springdale's diversity is the key to the hip, handmade future he sees for his hometown.
I think Springdale's a special place. I think it's going to grow in its diversity. I think the Latin American culture is awesome here, and I hope that continues to grow. I think the food is highly underrated here. There's the most amazing Asian markets and taquerias here that most people don't really know about. So I see Springdale as becoming a really cool hub in the next 5 or 6 years. I think it's kind of some of the best kept secrets.
Sarah Birmingham for Ozarks at Large.
It is Monday, June 2nd, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Karnatz, and with me now, Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And it is garden tour time again.
Okay.
We just did one. This one is the Flower Garden and Nature Society 17th Annual Through the Garden Gate Tour. And it will include 6 gardens, both vegetable and flower. And as a bonus this year, when you buy your ticket to the garden tour, you get a ticket to the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks, where you can go that day or any other day you want to. You can hang on to the ticket. The 6 private gardens are the Parrish Place Gardens of Cookie and David Parrish, the garden at Sassafras Hill, which is Reuben and Marietta Baltz's, the Heinzelman Japanese Garden of Margot and Pete Heinzelman, the Back 40 of Gloria Sutherland and Bob Harpster, the Old Sumatanga Garden of Barbara and Jim Hinton, and the As Life Changes, So Does Your Garden of Christine and Tim Klinger. Tickets are $12 in advance and $15 the day of the tour, which is Saturday. Tour hours are 9 to 4, and you can find out more at 935-3068. And you can get your advance tickets at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks in Fayetteville or at Westwood Gardens.
All right. Thanks, Becca.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
I met Jody at the rodeo. Later on, we dosed Joe down at the Casey Hall. But much of romance ended at a dance when she caught me with Melinda McCall, who promised she would marry me, but first she had to carry me to meet her parents out in L.A. But the whole thing degraded me, cause Daddy hated me and canceled every plan we made. Oh, there's been a whole lot of near misses in my life.
Sean Camp was born in Perryville, northwest of Little Rock. Although he's known as a hit country songwriter for other artists these days, in the early 1990s, Sean Camp was a rising country star. 5 years after he moved to Nashville, Sean Camp had signed as a solo act to Reprise Records, a subsidiary label of Warner Brothers, in 1992. The Arkansasian released his self-titled debut album the next year with musicians like James Burton, Roy Husky Jr., Allison Krauss, and Shelby Lynn. Camp wrote most of the songs and played dobro, fiddle, and guitar. The Sean Camp album didn't go over big, but it did well enough to warrant a follow-up. That's where things started to go awry.
Didn't know my heart was in harm's way. Couldn't see the change.
turned away. Didn't know my heart was in harm's way.
John Camp grew up in Perry County with his family, surrounded by bluegrass music. He got a start on the national country scene playing fiddle with the Osborne Brothers. So it should come as no surprise that he's a traditionalist when it comes to country music. Camp's 1994 follow-up album featured players like Jerry Douglas, Bobby Hicks, and Bill Monroe. But the label rejected the songs as too country and asked for less fiddle and dobro and more electric guitar. Camp recalls being told his album didn't sound like the current John Michael Montgomery album. In turn, Camp asked to be given a release date for the second Sean Camp album as it was, or be given a release from his major label contract. The company released Sean Camp from his contract, and the album went into the vault.
Shattered inside and scattered around, with pieces of her broken heart. I gathered her up, the pieces I found, put her back together like a busted guitar. With some glue holes and some glue don't, in spite of everything I tried, somebody stole my darling right before my very eyes. He didn't walk, talk, or push his way in, or fly through the window on a gust of hot wind. He didn't sprout wings, and he sure wasn't playing no harp. Low as he was, I couldn't see him. Slithering around in the dark, Lord, he must have crawled through a little bitty crack in her heart.
The multi-talented Sean Camp found another way to crash the gates of Nashville music as a songwriter. Sean Camp's songs have been recorded by Garth Brooks, George Strait, Brooks and Dunn, John Anderson, Josh Turner, and more. He's co-written songs with Loretta Lynn, Guy Clark, and Jim Lauderdale. More than 15 years later, Reprise Nashville finally issued Sean Camp's long-dismissed second album in fall of 2010 with the title 1994, named after the year it was made. The label also re-released the Arkansas's debut album in tandem with the release of the album 1994. Shirley Camp's subsequent chart success as a songwriter didn't hurt with a change of heart over the release of the once-lost Sean Camp album.
Well, I told my little darling better start to pack. Next month we'll be living over across the tracks. The owner of the plant's finally giving in. He don't want to see our naked light again. So let's call it a pizza, baby, and celebrate. That aren't important for us both to drink. Honey, all our dreams are finally coming true. We're gonna start living like the rich folks do. We're moving on up to a double wide. Parking our pickup every day with pride. Faith we got it made for the rest of our lives. We're moving on up to a double wide.
Nashville doesn't offer many second chances to its artists, much less to its recordings by artists who didn't make it big the first time around. It's a testament to the talent and tenacity of Sean Camp that he got both. Here in its entirety is Sean Camp of Perryville in Perry County with In Harm's Way, with Patty Loveless on backing vocals.
Turned away, didn't know my heart.
ocean of regret, with no hope of rescue from love I can't forget. Never knew just what hit me, too far gone to say. Never knew my heart was in harm's way.
Arkansas-er Sean Camp of Perryville in Perry County with In Harm's Way, recorded in 1994 and only released years later in fall 2010 on the Sean Camp album called 1994. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information, visit arkansongs.org.
Richard Louv is a journalist and the author of 8 books about the connections between family, nature, and community. He has written for publications such as the New York Times and Washington Post, and was awarded the Audubon Medal by the National Audubon Society in 2008. The Californian visited Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville last month to discuss the importance of balancing a technological life with experiences in the natural world. I visited him with him there at the museum. In his book, The Nature Principle, Louv looked at human restoration and the end of nature deficit disorder. He coined the term nature deficit disorder as a tongue-in-cheek phrase for his book Last Child in the Woods, published in 2005. But he says the term has now entered the language, and people have decided they know what it is. Louv says the term is not a known medical diagnosis, though maybe it should be.
It is, though, a way to kind of capture this thing that has happened in the last few decades that many of us knew was happening, even if it was unconscious or subconscious, that we knew it was happening. Something big was changing between children and nature. So this phrase kind of captures that. And before that, I think we didn't really have a phrase for it. We didn't have a way to talk about it. And that's one of the reasons why I think it caught on. It's because people wanted to talk about it. They were already thinking about it.
Well, from things that I've seen and heard and read, people that don't get out into nature, children, I mean adults, it doesn't really matter, have high anxiety and maybe even anger issues. I mean, is that part of nature deficit?
It's always difficult to prove a negative. You know, if people aren't getting something, it's hard to prove that that's the cause for why they are a certain way. I always try to turn that around, as I did in both Last Child in the Woods and The Nature Principle, and say, here are the benefits of getting out into nature that we're only now beginning to learn. We've known this kind of intuitively for eons, but finally science has gotten around to asking, what is the role of nature in healthy child development and human development, in mental health and physical health? What is the role in creativity and cognitive skills, ability to learn? What's the role of nature in how well people get along together in a community? There's a long list of things that finally have been studied, and this is only the last 15 years or so. Before that, those questions were pretty much ignored by the academic world, but now, there's still a lot of research that needs to be done, but now they're beginning to ask those questions and finding huge benefits from just a little bit of time in the natural world for kids and adults. Then the next question is, what happens to a population that no longer has that contact?
Well, it's kind of crazy to me, you know, that we're even really having to have this conversation, because when I grew up, I mean, I was born in the early 80s, and it's just, you know, Nintendo was just coming out, and I spent quite a bit of time in the outdoors. I rode my bike. I don't know. It's just, I'm a bit of a traditionalist, I think. I don't like texting. I prefer to talk on the phone rather than, or in person, even. So I don't really know what my question is here. I guess I'm just sort of commenting that it's just kind of insane to me.
Well, it depends on where you are to an extent. But here, even here in the Ozarks, and I have a little personal history in the Ozark region because I grew up in Kansas City and my parents would come down to Bull Shoals and Table Rock, and actually lived on Table Rock, they did, for a little while. And I love this area of the country. What's happened really in the last three and a half, four decades is that this disconnection started slowly and it has been accelerating. And every year that goes by, there's more and more disconnection. There are recent studies done that have been published by the American Pediatrics Association and in the AMA journal, et cetera, on the amount of computer use and texting and the number of hours that kids are spending plugged into some kind of electronic medium. It's growing exponentially every year. So what's happened is that it's crept up on us and it's accelerated. That's not to say, though, that there are not other trends. There has been a kind of movement that has been emerging in which Crystal Bridges is involved with to do what it takes to get kids outdoors and to get adults outdoors. There's a new movement in architecture called biophilic architecture, which rethinks our workplaces and where we live and work and play. Parks are really moving on this to try to get kids and families back outdoors because they've seen their attendance, many of them, plummet for about 15 years, the national parks. So they're very concerned about it. So there's a lot going on that actually could turn this around.
Well, and I know here in Northwest Arkansas, the cities and the municipalities are getting on board because we have the Razorback Greenway, you know, a trail system that's being built all the way from South Fayetteville up to Bella Vista. And I mean, and the trail surrounding where we sit at Crystal Bridges, you know, it's all part of that. You mentioned the amount of screen time, you know, and I think, was it 56 hours that you said?
54, I believe, is the last count, but that's several years ago. It may have gone up higher since then.
Well, there was actually a story on Morning Edition this morning. I guess that this week is screen-free week. You know, they're trying to promote families getting off of screens. And in that story, they said that kids under the age of 18 spend 7 hours and 38 minutes a day with a screen in front of them. And that was crazy to me. But then I realized that I'm sitting in my office and I have two computer screens and a cell phone next to me. And it doesn't seem that crazy anymore.
Yeah, and I'm the first to admit that I have a hard time getting away from my screens too, my computers and iPhones, and I'm not anti-tech. And in the second book, in The Nature Principle, I have a phrase that I repeat a lot, which is that the more high-tech our lives become, the more nature we need. It's kind of an equation. You have to assume our lives are going to get more technological. But that doesn't mean that that nature's going to go away necessarily. What that means is we have to consciously increase the number of hours that we have contact with nature. What we've done is construct an environment in our schools and in our homes for our kids, for ourselves, in which we are spending more and more time expending a lot of energy blocking out most of those senses, including the ones we don't have. That, to me, is the very definition of being less alive. Now, what parent wants their child to be less alive? What teacher wants their students to be less alive? Who among us wants to be less alive? Some do, but I don't, and I don't think you do either.
No.
And that is what nature gives people. It re-enlivens them. It restores them. It restores their senses. All of that is linked to how well people learn, to their creativity, that's what these studies are showing, to their mental health. There's more studies on mental health than there is on physical health. All of this can be improved with more time in nature. Not only you know, out in the mountains, but where we live, work, learn, and play in our homes, in our backyards, in our schools.
How do you attain the perfect balance?
It's not easy. I mean, I have to say it's not easy for my wife or for me to do that. We go on what I call techno fasts. We do fasting, technology fasting, where we'll leave. We have to leave our house sometimes because there's so much work calling to us and so many screens. So we drive to the mountains and spend 4 or 5 days away from electronics. And I find I go through withdrawal on the way out of town. I start getting all anxious about all the emails that might come in and with problems I can't solve instantly as if I could. But by the time we leave town and get out in those mountains, that starts to lift. Once we're up there, my sleep pattern returns to normal. I have ideas.
I think a lot of people do that, you know, calling it like unplugged. You know, you're going to the beach for the week and, you know, you are unplugged for the week. I know that I do that too. Go to Eureka Springs and spend a weekend in a cabin and unplugged.
And so, you know, our schools need to think about that too. What we're doing with our schools often are loading more computers and more iPads and more technology onto these kids to the point where in not too many years, the thinking of many of the high-tech companies and education establishment itself is that the new school of the future will be immersed in technology. They're busy cutting recess, cutting back on field trips. There's not a lot of focus on getting kids outdoors. And yet, we know from these studies, there's an unpublished study done by some of the same people who did research on attention deficit disorder at the University of Illinois. The research they did on attention deficit disorder found that the symptoms of that go down significantly, even kids as young as 5 years old, with just a little bit of contact with nature. They're studying kids in the projects of Chicago, a walk through trees in the woods, and those symptoms begin to go down. Simply greening our schools, getting kids outside more, having that natural play space, that garden, is the most cost-effective thing we can do to raise test scores, if we're serious about that.
Along the lines of schools, I did a story about 6 months ago on just internet in schools and technology in schools. And one of the teachers, you know, said, it's great. You know, we can see, I mean, actually, I think he mentioned the Louvre, you know, that students in Fayetteville, Arkansas, who would never get to go to the Louvre, you know, can see pictures through the internet. And I know that there's a line in your Last Child in the Woods, you know, that says, you know, something about nature being the portal to the world. And I think that some of these educators would argue that the internet is the portal to the world.
And I understand that. It's not an either or. Look, I love the internet. It makes my job a lot easier. But it's a different thing. I mean, when you're sitting in front of that screen with this feeling that you can go anywhere in the world through the internet, what happens to the rest of your senses? How many senses are you using when you're allegedly going anywhere in the world compared to what happens when you're outdoors in a natural setting? We need both. I mean, neurologically, we need both. There's nothing wrong in the internet. It's a matter of balance. And in fact, I know that many schools, and this is a good thing, I mean, this is one of the signs that we have the capability to find that balance when you hear more and more schools, this counter trend, which is more and more schools are having school gardens, are having greening the schoolyard and so forth. That so far is not the majority trend in terms of the dominant thinking in our public schools, but it's certainly there and it's growing, and that's a good thing.
Well, you mentioned that you have a tie to the Ozarks, and I know that this afternoon you spent some time walking around the grounds here at Crystal Bridges. May I just ask what your thoughts are on this, on the facilities here and the trails surrounding?
Well, I was told right away something I didn't know, which is Last Child in the Woods had something to do with the design of this place. The grounds around it, and it kind of melds into the philosophy of Crystal Grounds, but apparently Last Child really informed much of the design of the grounds, which I'm really flattered to find out. And I just walked through the grounds just the last couple hours, and it's just gorgeous. It's just beautiful. And it was actually Scott who from Crystal Bridges who took me around. He and I were practically on our hands and knees chasing skinks around on the like 2 10-year-olds. I was so excited to see skinks again because I grew up with them. Haven't seen them for a while. And I think that one of the impressions that I get here is that it is a different vision of the future. One of the things I'm most concerned about now, and I speak about, or I talk about a lot in my speeches, and I write about in the Nature Principle. You know, Martin Luther King said that any culture, any movement, any culture will fail if it cannot paint a picture of a world that people will want to go to. And I think that Americans, in particular, have lost in many ways the ability to envision a great future, maybe a sustainable, survivable future. They can kind of see that. But what about a great future? Can they really see images of that? The number one genre of young adult fiction now is called dystopic fiction. It's about a post-apocalyptic world in which not even vampires are having a good time. Those are the dominant images now that I think most Americans carry around with them of the far future. Nothing wrong with dystopic fiction. Nothing wrong with being worried about bad things could happen. But what about the absence of a set of great positive images of how the future could be? You know, King's speech was not called "I Have a Nightmare." People could see the possibility in the future. Do we do that now? Do we have images in our mind of what a great city could be, a nature-rich city? So walking around today, I was thinking, what I'm seeing here are some images of a great future, of a nature-rich future. That's a great gift that this museum could give the rest of the world.
Richard Louv is a journalist and the author of The Nature Principle and Last Child in the Woods. He spoke at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art last month. For more information on Mr. Louv, visit richardlouv.com. That's L-O-U-V. Theater Squared's 6th Annual Arkansas New Play Festival will feature 4 plays performed in one weekend, June 12th through the 15th. Including a fully staged production of Jamie McGaw's Beside Myself. Seating is limited. For more information, 443-5600 or theater2.org. Walton Arts Center presents the 14th Annual Art of Wine Festival June 12th through the 14th. This 3-evening event features a winemaker's dinner and 2 different tastings, over 400 wines from around the world, and food from area restaurants. Art of Wine tickets and information available at waltonartscenter.org or by calling 443-5600. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Karnatz. I'll be back tomorrow with an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large with my co-host Antoinette Grajeda. Until then, thank you so much for listening.